Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this Kingborough Council meeting. My name's Dean Winter. I'm the Mayor of Kingborough and delighted to welcome people here to this meeting, both in person for councillors and staff and also to members of our community via Facebook live stream. It is Monday the 9th of November 2020. It's 5:30pm and so I officially declare this meeting open. My first job is to let everyone know that not only do we live stream these meetings, but we also record them and save them on our website. And so it's a good opportunity to apologise for our last meeting 2 weeks ago where people would see the video, but they couldn't hear the audio. And we understand that was very frustrating to people who'd got used to being able to tune in at 5:30 on a Monday night and have a listen. It was a computer error and we've resolved it for this week, so hopefully you're hearing me loud and clear and we'll no doubt see the Facebook comments if that's not the case. The next item on our agenda is the acknowledgement of traditional custodians, but it's quite an important week this week because it's NAIDOC week, and so therefore I'm going to ask Ms Sarah Wilcox, who's not only our communications advisor but also the Deputy Chair of the Tasmanian Aboriginal Heritage Commission, to welcome us to country. Ms Wilcox.
Thank you, Mayor. Ya mina palininya, melodina pakana, Lutruwita tu. Hello, welcome to all of you as we meet on Aboriginal land here in Lutruwita, Tasmania. My name is Sarah. I'm a descendant from Malangana from the North East Nation. I pay my respects to the traditional custodians of the country we meet on tonight, the Muwinina people. I pay my respects to elders, past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. I'm proud to be giving this acknowledgement in celebration of NAIDOC Week. For those who don't know what NAIDOC Week is, it was created to celebrate the history, culture and achievements of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. It originally stands for National Aborigines and Islander Day Observance Committee and has continued to be the acronym to support the Week of Remembrance of Aboriginal people and their heritage. It is a great opportunity to get to know and support local Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities across the whole country. This year, the theme is Always Was and Always Will Be. This theme recognises that First Nations people have occupied and care for this country we know as Australia for over 65,000 years. The very first footprints on this land belong to First Nation people. The truth is that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people were Australia's first explorers, first navigators, first engineers, first farmers, first botanists, first scientists, first diplomats, first astronomers and first artists. The portrayal of our old people as uncivilised and as savages is incorrect. It is a false narrative that suited the invasion and colonisation of this land. To take the land, to exile our people from the country they were connected to the country they managed and cared for thousands of generations. When people are removed from their country, from its life cycles, its resources, its food and its stories, everything changes and so much is lost. The loss in Tasmania was almost absolute. It was and is devastating and is still felt very deeply. Acknowledging the truth and ongoing trauma of the impacts to our people and our places is painful, but however confronting, we need to accept it and we need to embrace it into who we are today so we can move together, forward together. We have so many things to celebrate, starting with survival. And here I would like in particular to acknowledge the strength and resilience of our ancestral grandmothers and grandfathers who, even though they were removed from their country, continued to practice and pass on culture whilst they survived on the Bass Strait Islands. Today our culture is thriving and it is strong and our people are achieving so much in a variety of professions. Land managers, artists, singers, authors, politicians, health practitioners, scientists and so many more. I thank this council for giving me the opportunity to acknowledge NAIDOC Week and I encourage people to take the time to listen and learn from the oldest continuing culture on this earth. We'll be sharing some of the places that you can do this on our social media channels this week and I hope you'll check them out. The health and well-being of our people is and always has been connected to the health and well-being of this land. The land is us, we are the land. Pewutu Prungi Taimi Power. Always was, always will be. Nyaraninitu. Thank you.
Just for those at home, someone just asked, are we allowed to clap? And it feels like that moment. But we're very thankful to Ms. Wilcox for that welcome, and it's so great to have a member of the Aboriginal community here on staff who we can ask to welcome us like that. And every time Ms. Wilcox does the welcome, it's always a little bit different and always well suited to the time and the place, and that was exceptional. Thanks so much. I think it's appropriate that I also acknowledge the traditional custodians who have walked upon and cared for this land for thousands of years. We pay our respects to the elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Aboriginal people who follow in their ancestors' footsteps, as Ms. Wilcox said so well. The next item on the agenda tonight is attendees, and they are myself, Councillor Winter, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass and Councillor Reet. From our staff this evening we have our General Manager Gary Arnold, our Deputy General Manager Tony Ferrier, our Executive Manager of Governance and Community Services Daniel Smee, our Manager of Environmental Services John Dool, our Communications and Engagement Advisor Sarah Wilcox, our Customer Services Coordinator Kelly Nichols, and our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. We don't have any apologies. All councillors are here and present. Next item is confirmation of minutes. And there's a recommended motion on page one that says that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number 20 held on the 26th of October 2020 be confirmed as a true record. Looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motions carried unanimously. Workshops held since our last council meeting on the 2nd of November, last Monday, we held a workshop on risk management. Next item is declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest to declare in any item on tonight's meeting? There are none. We move to transfer of agenda items. Does any councillor wish to ask for an agenda item to be transferred? There are also none. Questions without notice from the public. As we say every week, unfortunately, due to COVID restrictions, we can't have a public gallery in this room. And obviously that's disappointing for a lot of people. It means that we don't have the usual questions without notice from the floor. However, a good alternative to doing that is to email kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Clearly mark it as a question on notice for a future council agenda, and like those in the next section of the agenda, you'll be able to see the answer at our next council meeting, which will be held on the 25th of November 2020. And that leads me to questions on notice from the public, which were submitted since our last council meeting. The first is on Bush Playground at Whitewater Estate from Ms. Karen Pringle, and a response there from our staff. Question two is rates income annual budgeting from the Kingborough Ratepayers Association with a response also on page two. And page four has a question on North Roslyn Avenue from Ms. Tricia Ramsey and an officer's response there as well. And so we move on to questions without notice from councillors. First is Councillor Bastone, followed by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a couple of questions. Which come from the meeting at Bruny Island yesterday. Is there a schedule for roadside slashing on Bruny Island, and if so, what is it?
I think we're going to take that on notice.
Okay, thank you. Who is responsible for the dead trees for removing the dead trees on the sides of the road? Is it council or is it state growth?
I assume it would be, depending on which roads, whether they're state roads or local roads. Oh, look, I'm going to pass this to the General Manager. General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Bastone, Council does have a contract arrangement with state growth, so the short answer for both questions is Council.
Okay, and so a supplementary question to that. What do the Bruny Island people need to do to alert you as to which trees to be cut down?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Bastone, if it relates to a fallen or dangerous tree, They can merely contact the council through through either our service centre at Bruny Island, by emailing KC at Kingborough Council, or by phoning, of course. If it relates to a request to remove a tree, the same opportunities apply.
Thank you very much. A recycling bin has been placed at Lunawana, and it takes up 3 of the 6 parking places in the area. Could the bin be sited differently, or could there be a different type of bin used?
Mr. Ferrier.
Through the chair, yes, that we can consider that. Those bins have been placed all over Bruny Island now, so we relied on the KWS manager to site those bins, so obviously they could be removed and sited in a better spot if that's possible.
Thank you. And what do we need to do to have that happen?
Through the chair, just to contact either Stuart Baldwin or myself. If they contact me, I'll be asking Stuart to sort of follow it up with the contractor and to see what we can do in finding a better spot for it.
Okay, thank you. And I just have one further question. When will the council reinstate the drop-off bins for the batteries, mobile phones, etc., that used to be in the foyer of the Civic Centre?
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. We'll have to take that one on notice, Councillor Bastone. It depends on the availability of a good end result for the product. So we'll investigate that one for you.
So Councillor Cordova, then Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about NAIDOC Week. I'd like to start by thanking so much Ms. Wilcox for that incredibly powerful welcome and some information about NAIDOC Week, and its theme this year always was, always will be. What are some of the events or activities that Kingborough Council is involved with, and if people would like to get more information, find out more, where is the best place for them to visit?
I think Ms. Wilcox would be best placed to answer this question.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. Kingborough Council is not hosting any activities. NAIDOC Week is for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to have activities. There are a number of activities hosted by the Tasmanian Aboriginal Centre, the Southeast Tasmanian Aboriginal Corporation, so there are places, and we will be sharing those across our social media channels this week. Also resources, the NAIDOC webpage in particular, it's a national webpage that links to events, it also links to information, the history of NAIDOC Week, and all other sorts of resources as well. Thank you.
Councillor Street, then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is to the General Manager. General Manager, you might have noticed that at Hobart City Council's last meeting, they adopted a local procurement policy which gave a weighting to businesses within the Hobart City Council area for procurement over $100,000. At any stage, did Hobart City Council officials contact Kingborough Council to discuss this policy before its introduction?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Not that I'm aware of, Councillor Street.
Mayor, a follow-up question. General Manager, at any stage have Hobart City Council sought to raise with us one-on-one or through any other forum the potential of a group local buy policy or similar?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Not that I'm aware of, Councillor Street. That would normally be an approach from ELGAT, but I can't recall the City of Hobart making a similar approach.
Final question on this topic. Is a group policy for local procurement and local Tasmanian procurement something that could be looked at through the Greater Hobart Council's forum?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The short answer, Councillor Street, is yes, and it's probably arguably an appropriate forum in which to raise it.
Councillor Fox and then Councillor Reet.
Thank you. My question's quite long, and I've supplied a copy to Ms Morton. Council debated the landscaping for the second time on the 13th of January 2020 at their planning meeting. The contentious landscaping clause is on page 22 of the agenda of the 13th of January 2020. Landscaping plans must be prepared by a qualified landscape architect or suitably qualified person knowledgeable in the field and submitted for approval by Council's Manager Development Services prior to the issue of a building permit, I quote. The landscape must be at a suitable scale and indicate the following: A, planting in the area between the rear deck and the northeastern side boundary, the species selected are to reach a height of 1.8 metres within 2 years of planting, and C, outline of the proposed buildings, and C, proposed planting by quantity, genus, species, common name, expected mature height and plant size, D, proposed maintenance program, and E, the relationship of the plantings to the proposed height of the buildings. The landscaping shown on the endorsed landscape plan must be completed to the satisfaction of the council prior to the occupation of the new dwelling. The landscaping must be maintained for the life of the development of to the satisfaction of the council, including that any dead, diseased or damaged plants are replaced. At recent council meetings, when acting as a planning authority, councillors have voted to remove conditions on development applications relating to the maintenance of landscaping, specifically a standard clause that reads, the landscaping must be maintained for the life of the development to the satisfaction of council, has been repeatedly removed from the list of conditions for DAs recommended for approval. This landscaping clause was removed by vote on two occasions and now appears it is being removed from all future DAs to avoid relitigating the same debate. This is by precedent and not by a motion of council. My questions are, without the inclusion of this clause, is there any increased risk that developers will not invest sufficient resources into the maintenance of landscaping in the long term? Second question, the decision to remove the landscaping maintenance clause from all future DAs has been made by precedent and not by a motion of council. By what authority is this clause being removed on an ongoing basis? Three, without the inclusion of this clause, what head of power does council have to ensure that new developments are appropriately screened for privacy and amenity? Four, have any other local government of Australian councils undertaken to remove this clause? Five, has council considered or undertaken any community consultation before the removal of this clause? Six, what will be the outcome of the removal of this clause? Seven, can council staff provide a short report on the consequences of landscaping, describing what has and what has not worked? And second last, what other options does council have to green our residential areas? And finally, what other opportunities does council have to beautify our urban environment? Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Fox. We'll take that on notice for the next... the answer will appear in the next council agenda. Councillor Reet.
Thank you. My question relates to one of the items listed in the current and ongoing minute resolutions on page 105. It's the second item down. It's the new complaints handling framework that we dealt with at the last meeting on the 26th of October. I note that it says it's in progress, but under the officer's comments, I didn't feel that the officer's comments reflect the actual decision that was passed unanimously with the notice of motion passing, because this talks about reviewing the customer service charter and so on. What was passed was about replacing that with a complaints handling framework based on the model that had been prepared by the Victorian Ombudsman. So I just wanted to make that point because it's the second occasion now this item's come before us where I don't feel that the officer's comments reflect accurately what was proposed and what I'm hoping to be the outcome. And I would also like to know whether we would be having that workshop prior to Christmas or whether it will be in the new year.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for the question, Councillor Reet. We'll certainly take that on board. In terms of the workshop, I haven't got a firm date for that as yet, but I suspect that in part the officer's comment relates to the fact that council is required under legislation to have a customer service charter, but I think that's something that we can discuss at the workshop, and I note that the workshop is a council decision. Yep.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I have two questions. I note the public toilets at Taruna are scheduled for an upgrade next year. Is it possible to start the planning for this project soon so that we can enable the toilets to be built before summer in December 2021, which is peak period?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Westwood, yes, we can certainly take that on board. I note that in conversation with my colleague, Mr. Reeve, that a similar approach has been taken for the upgrade of the toilets at Blackmans Bay. Unfortunately, that one doesn't look like being undertaken in time for this summer, obviously, because we're hoping to go out for quotations in the next week or two. But yes, certainly take it on board for Taruna. Thank you.
Thank you. The second question relates to the General Manager's diary. On the 19th of October, in the company of the Mayor, the General Manager met with Mr. Emmanuel Callis to discuss the development at Margate. I'm wondering if we could have an update from that meeting, please.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Westwood. The Mayor may wish to add to my response, but the upshot of that meeting was that there's still little to report. Mr. Callis remains firm in his desire to obtain an anchor tenant, a major supermarket, before proceeding with the construction component of his DA.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions regarding the attachments. General Manager's diary on the 8th of October, the park and ride update with Stephen Burgess from Complete Streets.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for the question, Councillor Midgley. That is one of a series of ongoing discussions. We've got another one scheduled later this week, whereby we are working closely with State Growth in terms of the two park and rides that are to be provided as part of the Hobart City deal, one at Firthside, where a request for tender has gone out, and the other one, obviously, at the major roundabout at Huntingdale. Those discussions, as I said, are ongoing, and we are, I think, getting closer to seeing some action in both.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Just a question further about the Complete Streets. So Complete Streets is a private entity but working with State Growth. Is that correct?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. My understanding is that is correct, Councillor Minchley. Stephen Burgess is the director of Complete Streets but is also engaged by State Growth on a contractual arrangement.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. The second question relates to under the Organisational Development Quarterly Report. I note there was a pulse survey around staff's perceptions of management initial response to the pandemic. And I'm wondering at all, does Council undertake a workplace culture survey? If so, when has this occurred?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Rather than go from memory, Councillor Midgley, can I take that one on notice? We do undertake a number of staff surveys at various times, but it's probably best if I give you a comprehensive answer.
Thank you. The second question relates to a meeting I had last week with the project manager for Our Watch, which has a focus on aiming to shift attitudes and behaviour that drive violence against women, and it provides policy advice and support and input to governments. It also has a local government toolkit that provides information for gender equality and respect in the workplace. I am wondering, the project manager for this can give a presentation to council, councillors and perhaps the exec team approximately 1 hour, and we're very lucky in Tasmania to actually have a project officer working in this area that directly aligns to our government's priorities. I'm wondering if we could fit in a workshop with her before the end of the year or perhaps early next year. It approximately takes 1 hour.
We might take it on notice. I know that in the forward agenda, in the workshops, we do have a number, but certainly whether we can do it before Christmas, I'm not sure, but I'll have a chat to the General Manager and come back to you on notice. Thanks. Councillor Grace.
Thank you, Mayor. could I ask for a report on 27 Pearl Place, Blackmans Bay? I understand there's some works going on over there, retaining wall built over our stormwater, etc. I'm not sure of it, so I'd like to ask for a report on that and what actually is council paying for and what it's not. One question.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Grace, we won't be providing a report on that because it relates to a development application that is currently before Council's planning officers. I'm aware of at least one submission. The chances are if there are a couple more, it'll be coming into this forum for councillors to make a decision as the planning authority.
So you're not going to make a report available?
So I think the General Manager said that if the report comes, it'll come to the planning authority as opposed to Council acting as Council.
Yeah, okay. We'll wait and see then. Thank you. My second question is Tony Gamble, the costing. I'd like to have a full report on the exact amount of money that's been spent on that case, please.
Yep, take that on notice, will you? Take that on notice.
My final question is, Mayor, as you may be aware, there's a new committee set up on Bruny Island on Sunday. I'm wondering whether you as Mayor will write to the President and the Committee and wish them well on the upcoming 2 years or year they have, and also will you be writing a letter to the outgoing President?
Thanks, Councillor Grace. I've got in my calendar to go to the next meeting, which is the December Christmas meeting, and I'll be attending, so from there I'm sure I'll be passing on my congratulations to the new committee that I understand was elected yesterday, and also we'll be making a call to Megan Weston, who I think did a great job as President over a number of years. So I'll be congratulating the new committee and also thanking the outgoing committee for their work.
And just one other thing. With the Council Block of Land and the community working as a team to develop that piece of land, I have asked that the community group or the committee set out to work on that block of land with our council, of course. I would like to see that the Bruny Island Primary School, is it a primary school? Yes. Play part, their grade 6, 5s and 6s in that school to give them some input into something, a project.
So the project, as I understand, is being driven by individuals who are now actually running the Bruny Island Community Association. So presumably the Community Association is going to have a major role in the redevelopment of the block if it occurs. My expectation would be that that group would engage the school if that's what they'd like to do, and we'd certainly encourage them to do that. But just to outline the process here, the group will need to come to council as the landowner and put forward a proposal and have this council agree to what the proposal is. And at that point, it'd be a good opportunity to discuss involvement of the school. But secondary to that, there needs to be a planning application lodged, and council and the planning authority will need to approve whatever plans they have for the site.
Fully aware, thank you for that. And I just mention that because I think it's important that we involve the kids, the children in that project. And I have no doubt the committee will welcome that anyway, Mayor.
Neither do I. Yeah. Okay, there's no other lights on at the moment. Can I safely assume that means there are no further questions without notice? So move on to questions on notice from councillors. The first question was on social and economic impact study of gambling in Tasmania from Councillor Cordova. The second question was on the public open space account from myself. Third question was on the Suncoast walking track from Councillor Westwood. And they were the only three questions on notice. Next item is motions of which notice has been given and no notices of motion were received for this meeting. Next one is petitions still being actioned. No petitions are still being actioned. Petitions received last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions have been received. And so we move on to the officers' reports to council. The first item is the Kettering public toilets with a recommendation on page 12. Councillor Bastone, would you like to move? Seconded by Councillor Rees.
I would. Thank you very much. This is a terrific report. Thank you very much for it. The toilets at Kettering, which are present under the hall, are very inadequate. They're not suitable. They have no disabled access. And it might surprise people to know that these are toilets that are used a lot. This is a very easy place for camper vans to come in. People use the toilets. There isn't very many public toilets along the main road when you're travelling from Kingston south. So they're open 24 hours a day and they, as I said, are quite inadequate at the moment. The proposal by the cricket club, supported by the Kettering Association and supported by the hall committee, is that the toilets are not renovated, but that a separate block of toilets be built where the small barbecue is at the moment. And the current toilets will be refurbished by the cricket club, who've done a really amazing job on the oval and on their club rooms. At the moment, things are pretty dire, and they are using pop-up tents for changing rooms at the moment for all the matches. And it's really not very satisfactory for visiting teams, etc. So I would like to commend this motion and hope that everybody will support it and that we can get the unisex facilities built as quickly as possible and continue the great work that the cricket club's doing.
Thanks, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I just had a couple of questions. I think it's great that we're getting some new toilets in Kettering. I'm just wondering, will the toilet, the new toilet block, be DDA accessible?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, it has to be, given it's a new development subject to the provisions of the Disability Discrimination Act and all contemporary standards.
And the toilets inside the Kettering Hall, I noticed that there's $55,000 in the capital works plan for next year. Would it be possible to use or consider using some of that money for a disabled toilet inside the hall so that people using the hall don't actually have to go all the way out and down and around to the new toilet block?
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, that is the exact plan. It's to create a disability access toilet inside the hall, so it will need a reconfiguration of those existing facilities, but yes, that's the plan.
That's excellent, thank you. And what's the plan for the $45,000 that was allocated for this financial year in the Capital Works program?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, as indicated in the report, we used some of that funding to do the design work and get approvals in place. I've also flagged in the report there's an issue with the effluent disposal system. We currently have sought a expert report on our options for that, so once we receive that we'll be in a better position to know what our options are and what we're up for cost-wise, but effectively that would be the plan for the existing 45,000 with a new capital bid to go in for next financial year to build the new facility.
Thank you. And just when the new facility is built, I'm assuming it will take into account access to the tennis court, the playground, access to the water tanks for firefighting and the sewage system?
Mr. Smith.
Yeah, through you, Mayor, we need to do some more in-depth consultation with all the various user groups of the facility in relation to both the location and the design of the new facilities. The cricket club have indicated they very much like what we've built at Conyngham, but yeah, we need to do some more detailed consultation that hasn't undertaken yet.
Thank you.
Oh, the light's on.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Councillor Reid. Was it on before?
No.
Oh,
mine was.
Okay. Councillor Reid was first, then Councillor Cora. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Look, I think this is a win-win situation. We first became aware of the situation with these toilets when we did the, I guess, the assessment of all public toilets that Kingborough Council has within the municipality. And I think what was alarming is that we do have quite a few older ones like this, and this one in particular with not being able to be accessed easily by somebody using a mobility device is particularly concerning, and because the gradient is too steep, and just looking at the picture at 2.2, the size of the doors, a standard size door, can be very difficult for somebody in a larger wheelchair, particularly a powered chair, to be able to access. So I'm really pleased to see this. I think it's a great outcome. I note Mr. Smee's comments about consultation with stakeholders, and so my infomercial as chair of the access committee is that we are also consulted on the design as stakeholders. If there's one thing I've learned over the last many years on the access committee is that there is DDA compliance and then there's common sense. So we can comply with what is required under the Act in a legislative sense, but that's not always practical when implemented and when somebody with different sized devices is trying to manoeuvre around a disabled toilet. So small things like placements of mirrors and rubbish bins and toilet roll holders have a significant impact on how user-friendly it is for people with a big range of disabilities. So we look forward to the Access Committee when we get to the stage of design having some input.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I too just want to briefly commend the motion, and I really appreciate the contribution that other councils have made so far with some really good points. In terms of the community consultation, I think it really is important and good news that the proposals got the support of the Kettering Community Association and the Kettering Hall Management Committee. So I think it, as we just heard, that it's a win-win. Particularly that it's going to provide an opportunity to replace existing dated facilities, which basically needed to be replaced anyway. It will cater for an additional capacity for increased demand. It'll have unisex facilities, and it'll also be converted. The existing facilities can then be converted by the cricket club into change rooms. So I think for a whole number of reasons, it is good, and I'll be supporting it. Thanks.
Yeah, I just wanted to say the reason I asked Councillor Bastone to move is because she encouraged me to go down, Mr. Spee and I, to go down and have a chat to Tony Owen, but also Councillor Wass also encouraged me to go down and have a chat. Tony made a passionate, an explanation of why what we were planning to do was suboptimal, and he was quite right. We went down there, well, I did anyway, I went down there to tell him we wouldn't be doing what he wanted us to do, and when I got there, the argument was so good, I had no option but to agree with him. It was it's a no-brainer what we're doing. So, and also with the consultation, Councillor Cordova outlined, the Community Association, the Cricket Club and the Hall Management Committee are all ready behind this, so no doubt we'll do a little bit extra just in terms of the design, but I think there's a pretty big move on in Kettering for this to happen. And the Conyngham toilet that this design, I assume, will be based off, looks really good, the finished product, and it's pretty cheap compared with the other new toilets we've built recently. So think it's a good outcome. To sum up, Councillor Bastone. Summed up, thanks. Okay, the motion is that council resolves... Sorry, it was moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Reid. The motion is that council resolves not to proceed with the planned upgrade of the Kettering public toilets and instead prioritise the construction of new amenities block of a new amenities block below the hall with unisex facilities. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion is carried.
Now, I've got a question. I just look at the next item and I'm a member of a committee that's been allocated some funds, which I didn't see early.
Councillor Grace, you do under the regulation, you need to just let us know at the earliest opportunity, and I think you're doing that. So happy for you to declare that interest now. What's the club that you're
Southern
in?
Southern Channel Ratepayers.
Yep, sure. So you're just a member of the club, Councillor Grace?
Yes.
You'll be staying in the room? Yep, we'll get the form to you.
Sorry,
thanks, Councillor Grace. No, that's fine. Not a problem. Okay, bit better to declare it now than not at all. So the item is the community grants round one, and there is a recommended motion on page 14, looking for a mover and second. Moved by Councillor Cordova, second by Councillor Watts. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a very exciting opportunity to present the report to Council with recommendations of funding allocations for the round one of the 2020-2021 community grants program. So essentially what we're looking at here is throughout August and September it was widely advertised, the community grants. There was an amount of $40,000 allocated to the program in this financial year's budget, and so there'll be two rounds of $20,000 each. And so there was a wonderful number of submissions for grants. In accordance with the guidelines, the recommended grant for each recipient totals no more than 50% of the grant project cost. And so in this report, it's an amount of $20,007 that's recommended to fund 14 projects meeting all the criteria for the round one criteria for the community grants program. There are a number of wonderful examples which I'll allow my council colleagues to go through, but it was really uplifting reading this report and seeing that there's so many wonderful community organisations that are going to be supported through this important program. And so I commend the motion and also look forward to the next instalments. Thanks, Mayor.
Councillor Fox.
Just a quick question. On page 15, I note that the Bruny Island District School Association applied for $3,000 to establish a community garden at the school for wider community use and received no funding. But on page 16, item 24, the Rotary Club of Kingston applied for $3,000 to establish a community garden, and they did receive the funds. And I'm just wondering why two different groups in our community have been treated differently.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, this was a particularly difficult grant round to assess, given that we had three times the amount of funding requested as we had available, and there are a number of applications that met the criteria that we were unable to fund. So that's the first thing I'd say. In relation to the two specific examples, we look at the level of community benefit, and the assessment panel considered that the Blackmans Bay project had the potential to provide broad community benefit, whereas the Bruny Island example, being based at the school, didn't afford the same level of benefits, even though it is acknowledged that the application met the criteria and under different circumstances may well have been funded.
Councillor Grace, it sounds like a bell's ringing when you tap here, if you don't mind.
What happened?
Oh, you're tapping your foot on the... It sounds like there's a bell ringing.
That's my nerves, because I'm so nervous in here because I just don't know what's going to happen to me next.
All right. Thanks. I do have Councillor
Midgley. But I have a question.
I have Councillor Midgley next, and then I'll go to you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and I'd like to thank staff for taking the time last week.
excuse me, Councillor Grace, I'm just speaking. I'd like to thank staff last week for taking the time to go through. I sat down with them and went through the 26 applications. It would have been a really tricky grant round to decide, and thanks to all the people who put in applications. Often we don't spend all of our community grants money, so the word must have got out there, and we've had so many applicants. What I would like to note is there seems to be quite a few applications for things like hot water cylinders, upgrading of different parts of sort of facilities. Some of them are council facilities, so I hope that they can apply next time, and perhaps we might have some funding available. I also asked about the Bruny Island District School, especially, you know, because we do have the Blackmans Bay one, and as Mr. Smee said, you know, due to it being on Department of Education lands and the other one's on the Salvation Army, it has a different community focus. But I did note as well in the Bruny News that they have actually been promoting the Bruny Island School, and they are really trying to make it sort of part of a broader community outcome. So perhaps, again, they might look at applying. I'm just wondering, with some of the people who didn't perhaps get a grant, because I think council officers might be aware of perhaps some grants that are in the community around sporting. There could be some minor sporting grants, or there could be some COVID response grants or different community grants. Will council staff notify the people who were not successful of perhaps different grants they could apply for in the community?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. Throughout the year we get various email notifications about available grants, and certainly we forward them on to both community groups and sporting groups, and both encourage them to apply and indeed assist them with their applications where necessary.
Thank you. I asked a question in regards to the Tassie Mums. They're a fantastic organisation and they do work statewide. I use them in my other programs. I note they have only received partial funding. Can we ensure that that funding is actually spent to parents in the Kingborough municipality as part of their grant acceptance?
This is me.
Through you, Mayor, I guess our grant criteria states that an organisation must be Kingborough based with a focus on the Kingborough community. However, I can't give a 100% guarantee that the clients they work with may not come from outside of Kingborough. We could certainly indicate in our correspondence regarding the approval of the grant that it is to be focused on Kingborough residents. But certainly our grant criteria doesn't rule out an organisation from funding someone who happened to live outside the area, providing that they are a Kingborough-based organisation.
Thank you. The next question was in regards to the basics, and I understand that the Mayor and the Deputy Mayor are on that steering committee. I'm wondering at all, were they aware of the grant or how... Yeah.
No. Deputy Mayor shaking her head as well.
Okay.
We haven't met this year, to be honest, so we met. I don't think we met this year due to COVID, so no, I haven't had anything.
Thank you. So I think, I mean, as we've discussed before and I've shared before, the early years are an important 0 to 5, one of the most important stages of life, and it is the basics does actually support the early years. So again, it would be like to, if that's okay, recommend that if our council staff could be in touch with them and perhaps look at other ways we might be able to support them and promote the basics Kingborough, because it's a really important message for the community.
We do have the steering committee is reconvening in the next couple of weeks, so when we go there we will report that back to them.
Great, thank you. And the other one to note is the working it out. I'm not sure... Well, what I've seen around the municipality for the last, I don't know how many years, maybe I've missed it, but the LGBTIQ community, this is one of the first grants that I've seen, applications that I've seen for this community across council. I'm wondering at all, I might actually get in touch with Working It Out and West Winds to see what that project is, because it would be great to encourage perhaps them to apply before, but I'm perhaps wondering if council staff could maybe just describe why perhaps that Working It Out one wasn't successful.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the application was primarily to fund the wages of a coordinator, which is outside our grant criteria. Certainly the assessment panel recognised the importance of the program, and we have supported the $200 allocation towards the provision of promotional material to support the program, but funding that's going towards the employment of the coordinator to run it is outside of the criteria of our grant program.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. The other one is Sustainable Living in Kingborough, the Waste Reduction and Awareness Project. Just to note as well, Mayor, it's not really a group, but I have been involved in this group previously and occasionally attend meetings, but I wasn't involved at all in writing this grant and have only just read it over the weekend. I'm wondering, so sometimes I guess community groups like this put forward ideas around waste reduction and raising awareness that perhaps could be as part of our waste strategy. And I'm wondering if we do talk to other council staff, say in our waste area, about this application that has been put forward and to see if perhaps there is any other areas this could be met regarding waste education, budget areas or such other areas like that. Because I noted it is only partial funding, only $1,000 was met rather than the $2,300 that was asked for.
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, this was a situation in which the grant application met the criteria and we were able to fund part of the request, but due to the constraints of the available funding, we weren't able to fund it in full. We can certainly refer the application to our waste management area, but whether they have funding available to assist, I'm not sure.
Thank you, and thank you again for the assessment panel for doing such a great job.
No other lights on at the moment. Councillor, oh, sorry, Councillor Grace had a question. Councillor Grace.
Well, I think Councillor Mead really answered my question, or raised my question, was the fact that if in Bruny Island, if some funds or can it be looked at again next year, that was the issue, because I felt the same with the two ones there. I just wanted to make sure that it won't get dropped off the list.
So, Mr. Smee, you're able to, organisations are able to just resubmit in future rounds, is that correct?
Yes, Mayor, that's correct. You can apply again in the next round.
Great, thank you. Councillor Court, over to do sum up debate.
Thanks very much, Mayor. I'd like to extend, thank all the my colleagues for their contribution, and particularly to thank Ms. Alderfox and the assessment panel for what is another extension of a wonderful program. And in addition to thanking the assessment panel, I'd also like to thank the 26 applicants who submitted for round one of Council's Community Grants program this year, and my extra congratulations to the 14 funds, and I look forward to their announcement in November. Thanks.
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. So the motion was moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Wass, and it's that Council approve the allocations for funding from round one of Council's 2021 Community Grants Program as outlined in the attached table. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motions carried unanimously. We move on. The next item is on zero net emissions. It starts on page 17, and the recommended motion is on page 20. For a mover and a seconder.
I'll second it.
Move by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova.
Can I move it?
Obviously, you moved it.
That's all right.
Okay, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Midgley seconds. You did put your hand up and wave. So. Councillor Cordova.
Sorry, because
it doesn't matter. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. This is a... Firstly, I'd like to thank Mr. Dool and the staff for organising this. What we're looking at tonight, which is very exciting, is presenting two reports, and also basically the headline of this motion is that Council formally commits to a target of net zero emissions for Council activities by 2035. Why? Because it is achievable and presents significant financial savings, risk reduction and leadership opportunities. So as you can read in this excellent report, it's good for finance, it's good for risk reduction, it's good for leadership and it's good for the climate. In terms of the financial savings, they are remarkable. The leadership goal, the suggested leadership goal, by formally committing to a target of net zero emissions for council activities by 2035 is $26.6 million. The less we do, the less the cumulative savings will be, the higher the burden for ratepayers going forward. To quote the report at page 10, which is page 71 of our agenda, under the heading Market Goals, if we were to choose a less ambitious target than that which is recommended under the leadership goal, then essentially we would be, to quote the report, quote, anticipating that ratepayers will be comfortable with paying more over the longer time period as opposed to wearing any initial upfront costs. The cumulative savings presented in the three models, which you can read about in the report, there was a leadership goal, a reach goal and a market goal. And the recommendation here is to choose that leadership goal. Incredibly, business as usual, according to the report, is that if we do nothing, the projection shows that not only will there be a 22% increase in greenhouse gas emissions by 2035, which is significant, there will also be significant, indeed eye-watering, financial risk to council. So the good news is that by adopting a leadership goal, we will have significant cumulative cost savings, with nearly half of the savings stemming from waste abatement actions. So what we have tonight is an excellent choice, backed by a data-driven and evidence-based approach. If we read page 14 of the report, which is on page 75 of our agenda under the heading Future Cost Savings, you can read exactly how emissions reductions offer very significant operational savings to the future operational costs of the Kingborough Council. As the report states, quote, it is important to note that even in the absence of a price on carbon, all of the options show financial savings associated with the transformation away from carbon-intensive activities. And the report goes on, given the recently available technologies and proven approaches to energy efficiency and waste minimisation, it should be determined that a failure to implement some or all of the activities described above is a failure in long-term financial management. So that's why it's a great financial saving to adopt a formal target. But there's also the savings in terms of risk reduction and in terms of leadership opportunities. And so at this juncture, I would just like to ask a couple of questions, if I might. So with your permission, Mayor, I was wondering if Mr. Dool would like to comment on the potential risk reduction and maybe comment on the financial exposure that council would be would face.
Mr. Dool.
Thank you, Mayor. It's an interesting time, a consummate timing to be discussing this report with the outcome of the American election, the sort of outcome of the American election anyway, because I think this kind of discussion is going to take on a whole new importance. With America back in the game, I think a price on carbon is inevitable, and even if Australia doesn't go down that track, then where we get our imports from and a lot of our finance from, this will come to get us. So I'm not trying to overblow the importance of it, but I think given it's proven that we have an opportunity to do this, and without a great deal of pain, surprisingly, I think it would be the prudent thing to do to sort of de-risk ourselves from a carbon point of view as quickly as possible.
Thanks very much. In terms of the risk, I note that in the report it says this is achievable and presents significant financial savings and financial risk exposure reduction. Kingborough is a municipality that is particularly at risk, and council, this is a quote, and quote, council may have significant financial exposure in the event of a mandatory carbon pricing in the future, end quote. It is true that major financial institutions and insurers across the world are recognising these risks and factoring them into their risk matrices. And our council too has acknowledged as much in our strategic risk register, which stipulates that failure to plan for, adapt to and manage the impacts of climate change has a high risk rating. On page 15, which is 76 on our agenda, the quote is, failure to adequately plan for and integrate this target into council strategy and funding may result in a need for rapid transition in later years that increases ratepayer exposure both to both energy expenditure and carbon pricing. And you can read more about the risk exposure on page 17, which is page 78 of our agenda. Incredibly, Council's risk exposure between now and 2050 under a carbon price ranges from between $20 to $45 million. However, the report recommendation offers a financially sensible and practically achievable way forward, which I, as a ratepayer in Kingborough, am very grateful. The report recommendation sets us towards a leadership goal, which is a strong example of a council with grit, determination and a can-do attitude. In the context of a world where financial markets globally, intergovernmental organisations and governments at all levels are showing increased awareness of climate-related risks and climate-related opportunities, Kingborough needs to adapt or risk significant financial exposure.
Listen to
yourself back. I might just ask a couple of questions about Council's methane, the methane flaring, because I think it would provide some interesting context. So basically what the report shows is that waste accounts for 92% of all Kingborough's emissions. Petrol and diesel is 5.5%. Electricity from Council facilities is 1.2%. And electricity from street lighting is 0.5%. So my question is, methane, which is a greenhouse gas 25 times worse than CO2, methane flaring, my understanding is that it converts methane to CO2, which lessens, which thereby emits less bad greenhouse gases. Could you please give me some background about why the methane flaring is projected to be reduced at Beretta over time, ultimately with methane supply running out by 2027?
Mr. Doyle.
Hang on. Thank you, Mayor. The situation with methane, unfortunately, at Beretta, with the type of landfill it was, the methane supply throughout the site is very patchy. So what we've done in recent times is we've expanded the extraction and we are extracting as much as possible from the site, but that's mainly from a safety and an environmental point of view to stop loss from the site. Methane is produced by putrescible waste, and it's quite a while since we put putrescible waste in there, so there will always be a relatively linear line on decrease in the amount of methane a site like that produces. So the projections in here do allow for that. So, and it's a relatively inexact science, but at the moment we're flaring as much as possible, and that will gradually taper away over, unfortunately, 10 to 20 years. As I said, it's a bit patchy there, so it's a little bit inexact, but that has been factored in as an offset against our waste methane, but it will taper off around about potentially 2035.
Thanks very much. So, in conclusion, the main three reasons why it's critical that we adopt this ambitious target tonight is firstly that it reduces our financial exposure. Without doing this, the financial exposure, a business as usual case, could be between $25 and $40 million. If we adopt the most ambitious, as is recommended, the leadership goal, then we will cumulatively save $26.6 million. If we choose a reach goal, for example, it would be $21 million, or a market goal, it would be $9.8 million. So basically, the savings by doing the right thing and planning early are enormous. The report also contains an immense amount of detail with very succinct and solid recommendations, such as better data collection and recording and reporting, developing and implementing an emissions reduction strategy, creating department-specific goals, community education, embracing public disclosure of our greenhouse gas emissions reduction activities, undertaking economic analysis, a report on climate-related financial risk, and including carbon risk as a financial risk. As the report says, Although three scenarios are presented to Council in this report, it is recommended that Kingborough Council implement the leadership goal, net zero emissions, by 2035. This is because the goal is achievable and presents a significant amount of cumulative savings. As with any transformation, there will be an initial outlay for capital and operational expenditure, but this should be deemed as an investment as opposed to a cost. Council should consider creating its own internal investment value separate from the consolidated funds, which can also be topped up via a revolving fund with the initial investment paid off over 15 years. By adopting this proposal tonight, our council will benefit from reducing our risk, improving our financial responsibility and sending a strong, clear message of leadership to the rest of the community and further afield. The costs of adopting a slower approach are significant, and so when confronted with those choices, I commend the motion. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Westwood, then Councillor Grace. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I note that we have a climate change action plan, and as part of that, we have committed to net zero emissions by 2050, in line with the Tasmanian Government's target of net zero emissions by 2050. I note the Australian Government hasn't adopted this target, so we're ahead of them. And I'm very pleased that we have adopted a target of zero net emissions by 2050, and I feel that is a leadership target in itself. Thank you, Mr. Dool, for the report and for the proposed policy. I just had a few questions, picking up on Councillor Cordova's point about this providing a financially sensible way forward. I'm just wondering, under point 4.12, the potential abatement actions that could be implemented. First dot point, installing an additional 65 kilowatts of solar panels on two council facilities and storing 100% of their exported solar in batteries. How much is it estimated that will cost, please?
Mr. Dool.
Through
what page are you, on, sorry, Councillor?
Oh, sorry, page 19 of the agenda paper at point 4.12.
Through you, Mayor, I think at the way that is written, if we did that tomorrow, and that's not what we're actually saying, the cost would be of the order of $180,000. But I'd also like to point out that, for example, at our next CAPEX estimates, the Kingborough Sports Centre solar proposal, I will put that up again for the fifth year in a row. And that would do that once and for all, apart from the battery component, and we've got a number of years we could implement that as batteries become cheaper and cheaper. We're probably 5 years away from them really becoming cheap enough to warrant that. But certainly, I've always been of the opinion that the 100 kilowatts on the Kingborough Sports Centre is a no-brainer, considering the energy use is just going up and up there, and the return on investment is so good. So that would be one that could be done fairly soon.
Thank you. So that's $180,000 upfront capital investment, but we're not quite sure of the ongoing annual cost of the batteries. We're not sure of the cost of the batteries.
Through you, Mayor. That's today's cost. If we did it right now, I wouldn't anticipate we would, though, Mayor, because batteries are prohibitively expensive at the moment.
So it's prohibitively expensive at the moment. We might do it in 5 years, so that'll be getting closer to 2035. The next point, transitioning to a 100% electric vehicle fleet by 2030 and purchasing biodiesel for all bulk diesel supply by 2035. How much is that estimated to cost, please?
Mr. Dool.
Mayor, I don't have an exact cost on that. I mean, we have an electric vehicle transition plan anyway, and we have a committee working on that. So, for example, if we anticipated we'd like one electric vehicle next year, there would be an additional cost on top of a hybrid vehicle of something of the order of $10,000. And we would transition as the vehicles become cheaper and cheaper and more of them become online, and they become price competitive, which is anticipated to be in the next 3 years. So the main thing is that none of this has to be done in 5 minutes, and that's what the greenhouse strategy would flesh out, exactly the time frame, the milestones, the costs, the benefits. So that's where we would get down to the nitty-gritty, because these are just models and these are just suggestions of ways forward.
So we're going to adopt a target that we don't know how much it's going to cost or how we will implement it?
Mayor, we know if we take 93% of our emissions waste going to Copping, we've got a fair idea that if we take less waste to Copping, then we can have significant savings. The trouble, Mayor, is that you need to give me a target and I'll work a plan out. But I can assure you that, and I've said this in the report, I don't anticipate there will be massive upfront costs in progressing on the leadership goal.
And so the target that you've got at the moment, which is 2050, do you have a plan for 2050? So if we start with that target.
No, Mayor, because we never actually committed to the 2050 target. It was mentioned, and this is what this whole process has been about. There was a commitment in the plan that I would present a workshop and reports on exactly what zero net emissions meant, what it meant to local government and what it meant to Kingborough and how we might progress that, and then we would have a conversation about whether we wanted to do it at all. And in that process, we've come up with actually three options that are actually achievable in advance of 2050, but we haven't actually got it on the books that we are committed to do that anyway.
But it says at point 2.3, the plan action KCE 3.1.1 states that Kingborough Council commits to zero net emissions by 2050. Are you saying we haven't committed to 2050?
No, Mayor, because the actions that go with that say that I will present reports on exactly what that means and I will incorporate any commitment into a plan, an action plan, greenhouse and energy action plan.
But now you've put a report forward that says 2035. We haven't got a plan for 2050.
No, that's right, Mayor. I mean, as I said, this is just a report on... I said I would come back with the options for what is feasible in terms of transitioning to net zero, and we've come up with three modelled approaches, but if, you know, we can decide on any of those options or none of the options... But certainly the 2035 is infinitely achievable with the weighting we've got on how heavily we rely on waste and the need to minimise that.
So to the next dot point you mentioned before about waste contributing over 92% of our organisation's greenhouse gas emissions profile. The third dot point, implementing programs which reduce 75% of household waste collected by council and sent to landfill at an approximate rate of 600 tonnes per year. We've certainly just rolled out green waste. I know that FOGO is coming up. How much percent of household waste will green waste and FOGO contribute to that 75% reduction that's required by 2035?
I think that's a matter of opinion, Mayor. I don't actually know. I would suggest not a lot and not enough. But, I mean, if we sort of crunch the numbers on 600 tonnes per year with 13,500 collection, I think when I crunch the numbers, it's every householder, if they reduced their bin by 800 grams a week over a year, then that would be achievable just on the normal rubbish stream without FOGO and green waste. And I think, in my opinion, that it is very doable, because I think at the moment we just need to give people a lot more understanding of where all the components of their average garbage can be reduced, and also we could go down the track of actually, for example, as Mr. Burton said the other night, having smaller bins and trying to really encourage people just to produce less waste.
So thank you. So how else are we going to reduce 75% of household waste if FOGO and green waste isn't going to do it?
Mr. Doyle. As I said, Mayor, I think there would be a component of helping people to understand and giving them options for reducing the waste that goes onto the moving floor, which goes to copping. But I'm also of the opinion that a lot of the stuff that goes on the moving floor, if we had a better understanding of what is thrown on there, we could probably do better sorting and things like that just to reduce the sheer volume of waste that does go to copping anyway. So
we don't really know how we're going to reduce 75% of household waste yet.
Well, no, Mayor, we don't, but we should be, because we already committed to doing that in our waste management strategy 3 years ago. So all I'm saying is, Mayor, yes, we don't know exactly, but I think it's fairly obvious that if we did have a greater commitment to waste minimisation in the community and a better understanding of what is actually going to copping, that would be a really good starting point for a strategy on progressively reducing waste.
And the cost of that potential abatement is reducing 75% of household waste. How much is it anticipated that will cost?
Mr. Dill.
Ms. Mayor, how long is a piece of string? I mean, you know, the community, you know, if we had a community education person one day a week, it would be of the order of $50,000 a year. But obviously, if we're reducing 75% of waste going to Copping, then we're paying 75% less fees. So I don't think it would be all outgoing. I think the net balance would actually be in our favour.
Except we don't know how we're going to do it and we don't know how much this is going to cost.
Well, not being pedantic here, Mayor, but in our waste management strategy, we should be well on course to doing this anyway. We committed to doing this 3 years ago. So I don't, you know, that's what struck me as being very dual about the whole approach. We committed, and the number one action in the waste management strategy was waste minimisation and assisting the community with this, and we haven't done it. So we're actually on an upward trajectory with the amount we're sending to Copping every year. And yes.
Okay, thank you. The final potential abatement action listed here is purchase certified carbon credits to offset a residual 4,591, I'm not sure what that means, sorry, at an estimated carbon price, and that's 450,000. Is that 450,000 per annum or 450,000
one off? That would be one off, but it would be potentially, if you accumulated carbon credits along the way. I mean, that's a fairly brutal looking number, but there is a number of ways you could do that by offsetting. There's a number of different approaches to getting to that point, but that's when you get to 2035 and you feel, you know, you're still short of the goal, then that's a way you could do it. But that's an indicative cost given the carbon price projection at 2035.
Thank you, Mr. Dool. And just to the policy, I'm not really clear why we need this policy, because you've said that we've already committed to waste initiatives in our waste reduction strategy. The policy seems to repeat a number of things that we've already committed to apart from the 2035. Although I do note at 5.1 it says it will to enable a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions to net zero by or before 2035. So we started at 2050, then we went to 2035, and now we're going to potentially before 2035. So for me, this has too many unknowns in it to be able to commit to something, to commit to changing a target by 15 years without knowing how much it's going to cost, without knowing how we're actually going to do it. I don't think it's responsible to make that kind of commitment on behalf of ratepayers without more information. And I particularly am interested in the waste management and the contribution that our recently implemented green waste curbside collection service and the soon to be implemented, hopefully, FOGO service will make towards that 75% need to reduce household waste. So thank you for the report, Mr. Dool, but I can't support this without further information.
Okay, next I have Councillor Grace, then Councillor Reid, then Councillor Bastone. Councillor Grace.
Mayor, I support this report, but I have some valid points that I should raise. As you were aware, I was the chairperson on the Solid Waste Committee for this council, and we made some recommendations back, I think, 10 years ago, maybe more, when we were talking about building the transfer station. And one was to put a transfer station right down here in Kingston, which would have been ideal. If we're talking about emissions and fuel emissions, etc., etc., we won't go down onto that because that's immaterial, because we didn't do it. But what we did agree to do, and that was the fact, and I'm looking at the recommendations, some of them in here, which is to reduce the waste. We've been saying that now for 6-7 years. We've put different managers on, and I'm not criticising the managers down there, but I'm just saying we've put different managers on. In my time, part of that role was to go out and do education with the community and schools, etc., etc., to try and get this reduction in waste at Beretta. Now, I don't think that's happened. I drive in there and I have a look around, and as far as I can see, it's just open slab of what's tipped in, the belt goes through, and that's it. The other thing that I'm concerned about is our waste management strategy. Well, that strategy should be part of, if we want to achieve anything, we've got two documents that we're going to try and create to get. One's a bit different in the sense that this is a mission, rubbish is part of that deal too. Whether a committee, and I'm serious, I think the only way we're going to get any of this remission stuff in the next 3 or 4 years is to set up a committee that will work with Mr. Dool down at Beretta and look at the ways and means of saving the waste that's coming in there, because it's not being reduced. In fact, if you look at the financial report every month, it's going up and up and up to copping. I don't know, because you're just not going to we're not going to achieve all this if we don't act on it regularly to see where we're at. Because, as I said, in the recommendations, for instance, we said we're going to reduce. I read that in quite a few paragraphs of the report, but we've not reduced. We've not even looked at how we're going to reduce it, as far as I as a councillor is concerned. So that's all I want to say. I'll support this because it's another document, and I have a lot of documents at home where we had experts come in at the time and do a report. One was Jill Hickey, if I can say Jill Hickey's husband, I can't think of his name, done a fantastic report for us on how we could do a lot of things down there and reduce. But as this report will probably, I don't know when it will be readdressed again, we talk about fuel. I mean, I was one that went on and on and on for I don't know how many years about getting diesel vehicles into our fleet. Because now it's changed. It's now, we're talking electrical. That's how things have changed. But of course, too, when we first put diesel vehicles into our fleet, the emission control wasn't that very good them days, but I believe it's a lot better now. I believe they've come a long way with some of the emission control methods on these new trucks. But anyway, that's all I need to say. I could go on and on and on because it's a report. Yes, big holes with it, and I guess we could go back and look at the waste strategy and we do the same again. But until we actually sit down and form a body or have it come to council on a quarterly, monthly basis so we can have a look at what is being achieved, I'll leave it there.
Thanks. Next we have Councillor Reet, then Councillor Bastone. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. I just have two very quick questions for Mr. Dool. One is, what percentage of our streetlights are already LED?
Mr. Dool.
Through you, Mayor. I understand of the order of 80 to 85%.
Right, so we're only talking about 15%.
We are, yes. To get 100%. Yes. And, of course, all new developments then will automatically have LEDs, yep, as part of the... Yep.
And the purchase of certified carbon credits, why can't we just plant trees?
Mr. Dool.
Through you, Mayor, I tried that one. It's what we've got here is a process where you can actually certify that you're net zero emissions. That kind of process doesn't have an auditable approach to it. We've got 650 hectares of bushland that we might look after, and we've got re-veg programs, but at the moment, under the current criteria, that's not auditable and it's not certifiable in terms of net zero commitments. But certainly, it is an important component of any consideration of it, but it's a sleight of hand to try and offset your emissions by doing it that way at the moment.
Well, we're purchasing, your suggestion that we purchase certified carbon credits. Well, somebody's getting those carbon credits by planting trees. So why can't we be the ones that plant the trees?
Through you, Mayor, that's a really good question that I asked as well. Yes, we could possibly buy the carbon credits off Huon Valley Council for the trees they're planting, but you can't plant them yourself and claim them. So that's not part of it's the way the auditing criteria works. But that's the kind of carbon credits you would be for, through vegetation programs elsewhere. But that's just one example of how you might do it. There's a number of ways you could do it to get those carbon credits.
Councillor Reet.
Thank you. Just going back to the streetlights, so around 85% at the moment are already LED. What would the cost be then of doing the remaining 15%? Because I remember that was one of the things I think we got a state government zero interest loan for, and it was quite a substantial figure, which is why we got the loan.
Mr. Dool.
I don't actually know, Mayor, but I think I suggested in the report that it would be incremental anyway. You know, we've only got 15% left, so we could do that in small bits and pieces. I assume the 15%'s been left because they're in difficult locations or potentially future obsolete locations, and that's why they haven't been done anyway. But I don't think it would be a big component anyway over the period we're talking about.
Yep. And I have no concept of what the size of our current vehicle fleet is. What is the size of it?
Mr. Dool.
If we're talking light fleet, I think it would be of the order of 50 vehicles, but I would stand corrected on that. And then there's numerous trucks of various sizes and utes in the depot type.
So to be clear, we're only talking about converting the light vehicles, is that correct?
Yeah.
Given that the cost of electric vehicles hasn't come down as much as really was anticipated, you know, several years ago, they're still priced higher, quite often significantly higher. What would the additional costs be then? Because we've only got a 10-year time frame to do this for 50 vehicles, because it says by 2030.
As part of our CapEx consideration last year, we had a special report done on pricing of vehicles. We've had an update on that for this year's CapEx considerations. And, the availability's come down. You know, is a lot more, and the price has come down, possibly not enough. But it's anticipated in the next 3 years they will be comparable. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. So, hence, in our strategy, we've transitioned. We've got 5 hybrids now in the fleet, and we will gradually move to electric, but only at a time when they're comparable, as we've already had the conversation at CapEx last year. But it's the availability is going to become significantly more in the next 2 to 3 years, and the price accordingly will go down.
So then if we only start that in a couple of years, then we've only got potentially 6 or 7 years then to convert the entire fleet of 50 vehicles.
Well, that's right, Mayor.
By 2030.
But we also won't we won't replace vehicles unless they're due for replacement too. So that will be part of the strategy as well. So, but by then, you know, the actual vehicles will be a comparable cost anyway, and potentially fuel prices will possibly be significantly more. So it will become a no-brainer to actually do that anyway.
So what about the infrastructure that's then required for charging of all the vehicles? Because when we did consider that report, that was exceedingly high. I thought in the order of $140,000 for one charging point. We would obviously need multiple charging points, both on Bruny Island and on the mainland of Kingborough. So what what estimation of cost is there with that?
Once again, we've got an update on that, Mayor, too. But once again, that infrastructure will come down in cost significantly because of the sheer volume of electric vehicles. Well, it'll be market driven that these charge stations will be needed to be in a lot of locations. At the moment, it's chicken and egg type thing, not enough vehicles, not enough charge points, but this will rapidly change in the next 3 years or so.
I believe I read somewhere recently that there are only 140 electric vehicles in Tasmania that were registered, which sort of is not a great deal if you consider the number of vehicles on our roads. Look, I really wanted to support this, but the difficulty that I have with it is that we have half a report here. We have half a report which tells us about all the benefits and the greater good that we can do and the cost savings, but what we don't have a clear picture with, and in fact it's got even clearer in this discussion, that we just don't have the costings. So what we're being asked to commit to here is a target where we don't know the costings. And I understand that this is an evolving area, but to bring something like this to us with a section on finance that does not give us any detail on the cost to ratepayers, I find... if we were a business and somebody put this up for a business proposal, it would be dismissed and not seriously considered. So the problem I have with this is I feel like it's only half here. Some of the other initiatives that have been talked about. And I've got to say, the solar panels on the sports centre, I've been suggesting that in every CapEx and I kept getting voted down. I put it back up again last year after it came out. I put it back up the year before. I kept raising it, thank you, Councillor Bastone, because to me that made sense, and now it's, you know, we want to do it as part of this. There are costs here. We can't go into this blindly and say there are no costs. There are costs and we don't know what they are, and that's the problem that I have with this. We are still in a pandemic at the moment, and we know that there are businesses and individuals in our community who have taken a financial hit. And to my mind, we would be committing tonight to something that we do not understand the bottom line impact on Kingborough Council's budget and the subsequent flow-on effect to the long-term financial plan. Now, we have set out and committed to a long-term financial plan so that we can eliminate Kingborough Council's debt. And we are considering passing something here tonight that would totally go against that plan and put us into the unknown for who knows how long. It will result in rate increases, because some of the things that we've heard tonight, I can see the staff count going up and up and up, because all of a sudden I'm thinking, well, we're going to need a climate change officer, we're going to need extra staff at Kingborough Wastes, at KWS, to try and sort out some of the stuff that's going onto the moving floor so that it doesn't go through to landfill. We're going to need waste education officers to try and get that very ambitious target down, because the majority of this rests on ratepayers themselves reducing their own waste, and that is, changing people's habits is one of the hardest things to do, and that will come at a significant cost in terms of marketing and all sorts of techniques that we would need. So the costs to me keep adding up and adding up and adding up, and we are in uncertain times at the moment, and that's the reality. And we know that, like everywhere else in Australia and around the world, we are going to struggle as we try to rebuild from the pandemic. And now is not the time to plunge us into more financial uncertainty by having something like this. I think that the target of zero net emissions by 2050 is, Yes, it's not the preferred one, but in the context of where we are and what we've been through this year, I believe that's the only option and that's the one we should commit to. So unfortunately, it pains me to say I cannot support this tonight.
Okay, next up, Councillor Wass and then Councillor Fox. Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I do support the recommendation, and I support it because every day, practically every hour we delay doing something, it's going to cost us more, probably double. Net zero emissions is a requirement from us and everyone else in this world if the world that we inhabit or live on is to continue in a way that it can, if you like, provide life going forward. If we say it doesn't matter, I think look at our friend Donnie. Donnie wasn't going to do that because he wanted jobs, jobs, jobs and more jobs. Well, fortunately for mankind perhaps, Donnie's not going to be there after the 21st of January. And maybe there's going to be a new life starting in America to talk about things that are important, not only for us but our children, and more importantly for their children and their children. If you've got children today and they're 8 or 10, you must be scared stiff at the place you're going to leave for them in future if you don't do something, because they're not going to enjoy what we've enjoyed. When we started this many years ago, it was the idea for council to lead by example, to undertake various tasks that the community could follow. And one of the first things that we did was to put panels on this building. It's inconsequential that it saved us $80,000+ in that time. But it's shown people with their homes that they can do the same. They can add PV panels to their home and make a saving. Simply, if you've got panels, you want to do things in daylight activity so you can take advantage of the power generation that you're doing. What wasn't really much of a choice in those days was batteries, because batteries were starting and they hadn't got to the stage they are now. And as Mr. Dool said, in 5 years and in 10 years and even 20 years' time, the batteries of then will A, be cheaper, and B, they will do more or contain more power than what we have today. It's a well-known fact that Australia trails Europe. Europe is into alternative energy. It's into e-cars, far greater numbers than we are. In fact, I read an article about 2 weeks ago that Honda are not going to bring their e-car to Australia. They're going to only sell it in Japan and Europe. And when Australia is interested in running e-cars, they're going to bring their e-car here. That's just one. And you look around the car yards, particularly those from Europe, they're all going into e-cars. There's not very many builders now that are not going into e-cars. In fact, the F1 Formula Race won't exist, I would say, in 5 years' time, because the e-cars will take over. And that's going to be a big impact because a lot of people look to F1s. Technology is racing ahead, and we can join that journey if we so desire. If we want to stick our head in the sand and say, well, it can go without us, it's going to cost too much money, no, we just can't, and put up all the reasons that we consider valid, we miss the journey. And as I said in my opening remarks, that every day that we miss that journey is going to cost us more money. Every day, technology goes ahead. Every day, if you like, solutions are found to overcome some of the issues that we have today, and that will continue, because there's a worldwide movement of saying that we have to do this. We can't just sit back. You can even ask an 8-year-old at school, and they will talk about, yes, we need to do it, and why. When you look at the report, you see, yes, one of the things that does concern is our cost of transportation to Copping. and that will continue to increase under present circumstances because the population of this municipality is growing. We're 40,000 people at present, and who knows what will be in 5 years and what will be in 10 years' time. So those costs are going to continue to increase. What we have to do is to, with emerging technologies, look at how that emerging technologies can best suit us. What
time.
Can we do? I won't say any more then.
Thanks, Councillor Loss. Councillor Fox.
I'll be short and sharp. I think Councillor Wass has said most of what I would have said. I think we've got a very proud history in this council of having led the way from the very beginning with solar panels, with promoting solar orientation, double glazing, insulation in the planning to reduce the cost of electricity to our residents. We've done a lot of education in this field. We've put good lighting in all our lights, even though it was the cutting-edge technology at the time, but we did it, and it has made a lot of savings. We've one of the first councils that had an electric car for our mayor, our previous mayor. We've had electric bikes for this council. Councillor Wass, what was a hybrid? I thought I drove it once to Launceston and back with Councillor Atkinson, and I'm sure it was a, what was it called?
A drove on the smell of an oily rag, but it wasn't hybrid, and it wasn't an e-car, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I thought it was. And I do know that New Zealand's got heaps of them everywhere, and I've driven from the north of the North Island to the southern tip of the south, the North Island, in one, and along the way there were lots of charge points, and it was really amazing and quiet, and we spent no money on petrol or diesel. And there's a lot of biodiesel being made in Tasmania at the moment. A lot of the younger generation who are savvy are running their utes. You can smell it. And even the tractors in the fields are using biodiesel that they're making. It's time we got on board. It's really important that we stick with this policy. And it is a policy. Just like our access policy is also a policy, and it involves cost. It doesn't mean we have to do everything that's in that policy, but the cost needs to be faced because there is ultimately a saving, and we need to educate our community. We need to have vision as a council, and this is an opportunity for us to be positive and show leadership, which we have done all these years, and we should continue to do this. And I thank Mr. Dool and many other people who've provided this report. I think it's a very brave step, and I think it's important that we support this brave step, and we will go down in history, as Councillor Wass says. Our children, our grandchildren, are terrified of the future, and part of that is COVID, but part of that, the most important part of that, is climate change. So what more can we do to give them reassurance and faith in this council than to support this motion? I beg you to support it.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you to councillors for the debate, and thank you, Mr. Dool, for the report. I support this motion put forward. I believe it's aspirational. We've had expert advice. We've had reports from experts in the field. Councillors have attended a very lengthy and very informative workshop where we could have perhaps asked some more questions that have been raised tonight. As other councillors have said, the Kingborough Council is leading the way for climate change activities, and this is another strong way forward. We will be joining other councils such as Byron Shire, Hepburn and ACT, to name a few, who have a target of 2025-2030. I note that Byron Shire has recently looked at their target lowering in only the last few months. What is the cost? The cost of every new tonne of greenhouse gas is heating the planet further. The sooner the world stops adding a greenhouse gas to the atmosphere, the better. As Councillor Wass and Councillor Fox have said, it's time to act now. Five countries have a net zero target in place by law. Sweden, United Kingdom, France, Denmark and New Zealand. They've sourced that information from ClimateWorks Australia. I note we have taken steps like green waste, and I thank Councillor Westwood for leading the way in regards to that. And we are looking forward to FOGO. the City of Hobart has released targets, their information and data about the FOGO since they've had that. It's now been 1 year since they've had this. 70% of homes are using their green top bin. 11 Hobart schools have FOGO bins. 3.5 million kilos of FOGO waste has been collected and turned into compost rather than left to rot in landfill. And it's saved nearly 5,000 tonnes of CO2. I'm an average family, two kids, two adults. I put my bin out every second or third week. I'm aware of my waste. There's so many ways that are out there to look at how we can reduce waste on social media and different habits. It's about listening, I guess, to what's out there, and people can take change if there is targets and aspirations. As Councillor Watson and Councillor Fox have said, children are speaking up and asking government to take action now. We're seeing movements across Tasmania, globally, and let's listen to them. I have a question about the waste strategy, and I'm wondering at all. I think the waste strategy is due for review in 2024 by memory. I'm just wondering, as part of passing this motion, will we need to review the waste strategy earlier?
Mr. Dool.
Through you, Mayor, I think it would be prudent. The main problem was it didn't set any goals. It said reduce waste, but there was no goals, no milestones. And I think if we were to adopt a target like this, then it would make sense to dovetail the two in, as Councillor Grace was saying. And that wouldn't be a big job, because what it would be doing would be putting meat on the commitment that we want to minimise waste and reduce waste.
Thank you, Mr. Dool. And I often have people talking with me in the community with the sad fact they did actually put comments to when we were developing our waste strategy that it didn't actually have a goal. So this strategy, I guess, yeah, this policy we're looking at and the information we've got looking at does actually, you know, get us to go back and visit that and to actually let us have a look at this waste strategy and implement a goal and perhaps some more strategies and procedures in place. I look forward to the 5.2 that states in the policy the implementation of a net zero carbon strategy to deliver the target, and I do believe and hope that it will provide further details regarding Councillor Westwood's comment and Councillor Reet's comment in regards to costing, timeframes, etc. And I'm just wondering, Mayor, if Mr. Dool could perhaps alleviate some of those concerns regarding the costing and the unknowns, and perhaps the implementation of this strategy will perhaps provide some more details around those timeframes and questions.
If you know what that question is, then Mr. Dool.
Thank you, Mayor. The problem is we have, as you say, I don't have a commitment to work a plan off. But I think it's safe to say that when I came back to council with the net zero strategy and the plan that would give the actual milestones and the costings of how we might get there, there would be a lot more sort of surety in that this isn't going to cost millions of dollars. In actual fact, the offsets of the savings and the reduction in risk in the long term would be worth it. And I would be of the opinion that if I got a commitment to 2035 tonight and I went away to formulate those plans and you didn't like what those plans said, then you could rescind the motion and change the goal, the target. But certainly I'm happy to go away and within the next 6 months put some more certainty in the costings of a 2035 commitment. But it's very hard to right here and now say exactly what every component of that, because there's so many variables in how quickly we go about various pieces of it. The most obvious one, though, is reducing waste, because it's such a massive component of our greenhouse footprint. And we're committed to doing it anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Dool. I'm confident with that, and with my next 2 years on council, I look forward to supporting this goal and target where I can.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, I'm disappointed tonight, and I'm disappointed because, look, let's say up front, I fully expect for my contribution on this matter to be used against me. and for me to be called every manner of climate change denialist under the sun when nothing could be further from the truth. The reason that I am disappointed tonight is that Kingborough Council did commit to zero net emissions by 2050. We did so in the plan that we endorsed. To suggest otherwise is incorrect. With greatest respect, staff were then asked to provide a position paper on the practical implications of that commitment and to provide options for that commitment. That is why I'm disappointed. A target of 2035, as has been expressed in the report, could not possibly have come at a worse time for council and for this community, especially with the uncertainty in terms of cost to the community and cost to ratepayers. The reason I say that is this. Under the target that we committed to 2050, the period of time, and it should be said as well that 2050 is a leadership target. 2050 is a leadership target, and let's not kid ourselves, that is also all it is. Because the reality is that no matter what Kingborough Council does in terms of its zero net emissions, without contribution from governments larger, or levels of government far larger than ours, all we can do is lead. So 2050 is a leadership target. And with the time between now and 2050, there is time to even out the uncertainty and even out the questions of cost and even out all of the cost uncertainties that have been identified tonight. And it is still a leadership target. I cannot in good conscience commit to a target 15 years earlier than what we had requested a report on, in a period of time where there is so much uncertainty already for this council and for this community. It may well be that as we come out of the COVID crisis, we are able to revisit this matter. But again, I'm disappointed that what we committed to is not what we've received, and I'm disappointed that in what we committed to not being what we've received, there are going to be councillors on this council that I have absolutely no doubt will be portrayed in a negative light because of it. And that's through no fault of our own. That's because we made a commitment in good faith and then we were given something completely different and recommended something completely different. Mayor, I simply cannot support the motion in good conscience at this time and will be voting as such.
Thanks, Councillor Street.
There was no question in that.
Yeah. Look, it's easy to sit here and commit to a 2035 target. We can do it with not a broad amount of community consultation. We can do it if we wanted to this evening. Councillor Fox said we'll go down to history for this, or worse to that effect. But I'm not sure we would. I think if Kingborough Council did go with this policy tonight and then actually achieved zero net emissions by 2035, that would be pretty impressive. But the commitment itself isn't really very impressive at all. It's an ambition, if that's what Council goes to. I too had the executive summary in front of me from our climate change plan, which does say key components of the plan include a commitment to achieving carbon neutrality by 2050. And so we do have a target at the moment, 2050. Mr. Dool, in the report and today, outlined to me that this is a target just for the organisation, which I think is good. I'd hate to see us trying to make this sort of commitment for the whole community as opposed to for the organisation. And I think the leadership is on council. That's why I think it's important for us to have a target for us as an organisation rather than as a community, because really the community, when it comes to climate change, should be led by the Tasmanian government and, to a lesser extent, probably the Australian government on this matter. Like Councillor Street, I do believe in climate change. I supported the 2050 target in the climate change plan. But I suppose that the point that turned me more than anything tonight is I can't see the benefit in going before the state government. The Tasmanian government has set a target of 2050, and it's done so before it's got a waste management, before it had a waste management strategy. And we've heard tonight that 92% of our waste, of our emissions, will be through waste. And I think the government's waste strategy, its levy on waste, will be a key component of this. And if we're aligned differently to the Tasmanian government, I think it'll become more expensive for us to actually achieve the outcomes we want. So for that reason, I'm comfortable with the 2050 target and won't be supporting the 2035 target this evening. Councillor Cordova, to sum up.
I had a question, first of all. Mayor, my first question is to Mr. Dool.
And no, you're summing up, Councillor Cordova.
Thanks very much, Mayor. We are looking at a proportion here. We've heard a lot in the debate tonight that we don't understand the bottom line, the costs. We actually do know the costs, and they're throughout the report. The cost is actually on page one. Carbon is a corporate risk, and the amount of money that we're looking at spending as a result of, if a carbon price were to be implemented tomorrow and we had between now and 2050 to rectify the fact that we're producing 14,500 tonnes of emissions, that cost, depending on the carbon price, if it's $16 or $2,300 as one of the examples, could be $40 million. If you look at page 78 of our report tonight, page 77, I'm going to read the quote. Without implementing any energy efficiency or emissions reduction initiatives under a policy-driven scenario, Kingborough Council is estimated to pay a total of $60.3 million in carbon offsets from 2020 to 2050. So we actually do know what the cost is. The 2050 target, which they're calling the market target here, which is what the Mayor has been saying essentially is a good idea, that will save the Council $9.8 million between now and 2050. But the 2035 target will save the Council $26.6 million. So by not adopting the recommendation tonight, we are adopting a projected spend. Just be aware of that. We are adopting a projected spend of an extra $16.8 million. So that's what we're signing up to tonight. I'll quote the report. It should be determined that a failure to implement some or all of the activities described above is a failure in long-term financial management. So no, I'm not going to accuse anyone of climate denialism, but I'll certainly be making it abundantly clear to the community that we were presented with costs, and we chose the option that is $16.8 million more expensive than the option, which meant that we would have to pay some upfront costs. Let's say it's $140,000 for lighting now. Well, that equates to 0.3% of the potential cost of not running these abatements. So do you want to pay 300 times more in a few years, or do you want to pay less now? We can see in the report that the international agenda is changing. Whether it's the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, the G20 countries, the Bank of International Settlement, every major bank and insurer in the world is pricing in carbon, and this council isn't. Now, if Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank and HSBC are doing it, we are going to get very much left behind if we don't. And you can see it in the report all the way through. It says that without doing anything, and I quote, we are anticipating that ratepayers will be comfortable with paying more over the longer term period as opposed to wearing any initial upfront costs. That's the proportion that I'm trying to explain. 92% of our waste, 92% of our emissions is in waste. All these conversations about LED lighting costing $140 or electric vehicles, keep your eyes on the proportion here. 92% of our emissions are coming from waste. We have mechanisms now to reduce the amount of household waste by 75%. It says all the way through the report that it's practical and feasible. And it says throughout the report
time.
It will significantly reduce our risk and financial exposure.
Okay, the motion was moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Grace, and it's that Council A acknowledges the receipt of, one, the Kingborough Council Greenhouse Gas Emissions Report, October 2020. Two, the Kingborough Council Net Zero Greenhouse Gas Emissions Report, October 2020. B, formally commits to a target of zero net emissions for council activities by 2035, and C, adopts the Kingborough Council Greenhouse and Energy Policy Zero Net Emissions. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
Hover division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. It's Councillor Grace, Fox, Cordova, Midgley and Wass. And those against? It's Councillor Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood and Winter. The motion is lost. Next item. confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. The motion is that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council, by absolute majority, move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, application for leave of absence, Kimber Awards 2021, Beretta Solar Farm transfer request for construction and operational licence. Mover and second, moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion is carried unanimously. With that, we end our open session of Council at 7:30 p.m. I'd like to thank everyone at home who tuned in to watch the debate. I'm glad that it went more smoothly tonight. We'll see you again in 2 weeks' time, which will be Monday the 23rd of November at 5:30 p.m. See you then. Thanks very much.